Greetings, friends. I'm Wayne Tucker, and this is the Newfound Records Radio Hour. Last week, Newfound Records brought you part one of the Lou Skinner story. From the legendary guitarist's boyhood days in Rose Blanche, where he squeezed his mother's accordion on his family doorstep, forming the Ducats, recording the province's first rock and roll single, and appearing on national TV. Today, we'll hear how Lou discovered Newfoundland's only double Juno winner. We'll travel to Nashville with Lou, where he recorded with his teen idol. And we'll hear how Lou coaxed Newfoundland's first lady of the accordion from her kitchen to the recording studio. Today, the conclusion of the Lewis Butch Skinner story. Last week we heard how Lou's personal interest in music began with the traditional Newfoundland songs he heard his mother and grandmother play on accordion in Rose Blanche. Lou also liked the hillbilly or country and western music he heard in the movies, and later he heard it on the radio from Wheeling, West Virginia. Then came Elvis, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Lou was hooked on rock and roll. He became the leader of one of the province's premier rock and roll bands, the Ducats. They toured the province and eastern seaboard continuously through the mid and late 1960s, and into the early 70s. But by 1971, the rock and roll Ducats band had run its course. We now pick up Lou's story as he speaks of the decision to go country, of discovering a Juno Award-winning vocalist, and he also speaks of the thrill of recording with his boyhood idol, guitarist Scotty Moore, in Nashville.
Back in 71, when we came out the road, I was saying, now what can we do now? You got to change with the times or you're going to fall off the bike. So I thought to myself, well, maybe we can go country. I like country music anyway. So most of the boys went their own way. Claude went to Stephenville. Jim went to Port au Bass. Bob and I stayed here. Our drummer we had at the time was from here anyway. And by that time, of course, Brother Roger was playing drums. And we decided we'd start the Country Ducats. We had to keep the name because the name helped us get bookings. Like when they heard the name Ducats, they took it for granted. Well, the music's going to be good, whatever they're doing, I suppose. And that was complimentary to us. And we went out looking for a country singer. Myself and so happened the steel guitar player and his wife there from Port au Bass, Fred Lawrence and Kathy Lawrence, friends of ours. We went out to a club out on Topsail Road. I forget the name of the club now. And there was a little trio in there.
Piccadilly
Club. You got it. And I said to Fred, I said, he's a pretty good singer. Yeah, he said, that's why I'm here, because his brother works with me down at Coast Guard. Oh, I said, you knew. He said, I never heard him before, but they say he was a good singer. What do you think? I said, yeah, he's a good singer. I like him. So Eddie Rouser was his name. So I called him over. I said, you serious about this band or you want to join another band? He said, what band? I said, we're going to put together Country Ducats. Fred's going to play steel, bass, drums. Brother Roger's playing drums. Myself, you play rhythm. Well, he said, that's good. I said, what are you doing? He said, I just came out of trade school doing electronics. I said, good, you want a job? He said, yeah, where at? I said, I got a music store on Water Street. Why don't you come down there and do some shifts and do the repairs, do the amplifier repairs, guitar repairs, and serve customers, whatever you want to do. So now you got yourself a band and a job all in one night, you know? And he said, well, I don't have very good stuff. I said, well, when you come down to the store, I said, get the catalog out and pick out what you want. We'll order it. So he bought a Martin guitar and a Fender Telecaster and a Fender amp. So I said, next, what else you want? No, he said, that's good. So we went from there, right? Did the local music scene, and then I forget what year it was. I guess it was 73. I got to think about the car I had. Yeah, it was 73. And I said, we should go to Nashville and do a session. And that would give us publicity. So I went in, saw the bank manager, Bank of Commerce, and I said, we need a loan. We're going to Nashville to do a record. And he laughed at me, and I said, not me. I said, we got a singer, Eddie Rousel, and we're going to start doing some country stuff. How much money do you want? I said, I need $5,000. Oh, my God. $5,000 to do a bloody old record. I said, yeah. It's an album. So he gave me the money, and I had something up my sleeve anyway. There was a recording studio in Nashville called Music City Recorders. It was owned by Pete Drake, who was a very famous steel guitar player. He played with everybody. He gave up managing the studio, and he rented it to Scotty Moore. And I knew this. I found out this, right? So I thought to myself, what a time, what a circumstance for me to meet Scotty Moore, my hero from back in the early Port of Ass days, right? So I called him and told him I want to do a recording session, and he said, I'll mail you up a breakdown for your 10 tunes, and you'll see your cost factors and go from there. We'll need 50% deposit. I said, no problem. So he sent me up a letter with we still got that on somewhere, with a cost factors in it. I sent it down 50%, I think around $2,000 or so. And before you know it, me and Eddie was in Nashville, sat up with Scotty Moore, Pete Drake, DJ Fontana on drums. So I had two of Elvis's guitar musicians. Yes. Willie Rainsford on piano, another one of Elvis's session people. And we had a different bass player, because Bill Black had already died years ago. We had a bass player and another guitar player. And to me, that was great. You know, hanging around the studio all day long for a few days with these people, right? And Scotty Moore had his guitar there in the case, the big guitar. And I asked him, could I look at it? And he said, yeah. So I opened it up and looked at it, and I thought to myself, you know what? This is history. I'm handling a guitar that played with Elvis. I'm handling a guitar that aired on my old 78 records. Oh, my. I got a little bit overwhelmed with that. But we did a session, and Eddie came home, and we got good mileage out of the record. It was a good record. And then Eddie decided that he should further his career, go somewhere else. So he...
We know where he went.
Yeah, he went to Toronto and played and got some Juno Awards and ended up down in Nashville writing tunes for some good labels and things like that. And he's still going. He's still doing pretty good, you know?
Yes.
Which is all right. So that was another era. So when Eddie left and the country thing, we kept it going for a while with other singers. And then it stopped, maybe only for a period of about 4 or 5 months. Then we revamped the band back into old rock and roll. And we're still doing that now.
When you went to Nashville, you mentioned that you and Eddie went. Did any of the other members of the, local members of the Country Dukettes, were they involved in the recording sessions?
No.
You mentioned Fred Lawrence, for example.
We ordinarily, our old line of thinking, old school, which we still are, I guess, would be, we want to have our own people. We want to have our own people. But to fly five people down to Nashville to do a recording session, and we get in there, and then we get through the session, it would be very, very time-consuming. So I learned at the proper time that the band guys, with the big-name people, don't do that. There's session men, they call them, especially if you get if you're lucky enough to hire what they call the A-team or members of the A-team in Nashville. They go in, they listen to it, and they've got a pencil and paper in front of them, and they're writing it out as they're listening to the tape on what you're doing. And when the tape rolls, they play it. Usually one take. If there's two takes, well, okay, that's the most. But it's done, over with. Next tune, done, over with. Yeah. And I thought, my God, if we were here, we'd be a week doing the session. Yes. And we had a session done in about 10 hours, everything done. And the next morning in 4 hours, we had it mixed, over with.
So to get it straight then as to who was in the studio, there was you and Eddie. Did you play guitar on that album?
Yeah, I played played some guitar. You had a pretty good acoustic guitar on that too.
So the lead guitar was Scotty Moore, was it?
No, it was a fellow Chip Young. Okay. Scotty Moore did some guitar work too. Yeah,
he did play on it.
Chip but Young. He wasn't into the country guitar as much. He was still a rock and roll guitar player, and he still is today at 80 years old, you know.
Yes.
But they had a fellow, I believe his name was Chip Young.
Right.
And that's who played a lot of the lead work. And I played some stuff behind him, and I played, my own acoustic down there, and I played some acoustic rhythm.
And who was the drummer?
DJ Fontana.
So it is DJ Fontana on drums.
Yeah, and right. Pete Drake was there, and...
And the steel guitarist, Pete Drake.
Yeah. And what was interesting, it was one of these things, again, where you take stuff for granted. Like, I wasn't going around with camera, taking pictures. I wouldn't do that. They were just music heroes of mine, and I was lucky enough to be there. But then in later years, Paul McCartney goes to Music City Recorders. He wants to do a tune called Sally G. About nightlife in Nashville, right? And who did he use? Pretty near the same people I had. And Ringo Starr went there and recorded Act Naturally and a couple other tunes. Mm-hmm. So at different times I'm reading for these guys what they're doing. I'm going to say, my God, we're no different than them. They went to the same studio we did. They used the same people. Isn't that something?
This broken heart is as dark as skies at midnight. These eyes weeping tears to fill a sea. These arms reaching out but holding nothing. Those shattered dreams no longer hold for me. The love you promised me, those sweet, sweet words you said, my doubts were made quite sure when you walked out the door. Another fool. A fool to be like me. No one can help this poor heartbroken fool. Does he know the bad mistake he's making now? Or will he turn his back on her and see her cheating ways and the lies she told to him that day? Or will he play the silly fool like me? The love you promised me, those sweet, sweet words you said, my doubts were made quite sure when you walked out the door. Another fool to be. This poor heartbroken fool.
Time for a little breather. On the other side, Lewis Skinner speaks of efforts to establish a music industry association 20 years before Music NL came into being.
I'm David Suzuki. Poll after poll shows the same thing. The environment and global warming are Canadians' number one concern. But a lot of politicians behave as though they don't know that, or as though it doesn't matter. You have to tell your elected representatives at every level of government the environment matters to you and how you vote. They'll hear that. The future is in your hands.
Get involved. Make yourself heard. Find out how at davidsuzuki.org.
You're listening to 93.5 CHMR.
I'm Wayne Tucker, and you're listening to the Newfound Records Radio Hour. Today, part two of the Lou Skinner story, The Man and His Music. By 1973, Newfoundland musicians like Harry Hibbs, Dick Nolan, and Roy Payne had enjoyed outstanding success in mainland Canada as well as in Newfoundland. Canadian content regulations for radio were in place, and local musicians began to realize the potential of music as a business. Making music could be more than just a weekend hobby. It could be a full-time occupation. Although local knowledge of the music business was limited at that time, a few music visionaries of the day, including Lou Skinner, decided to set up a music industry association. Lou explains.
In 1973, I think it was, you and a few other key people in St. John's were thinking ahead of your time, in my view, when you tried to set up a sort of a music industry association for the province, and you had some limited success, but fizzled, unfortunately. Tell me about how that came about. And I know you had a convention and there were awards and all that sort of thing and plans for the future. Just talk to me about that for a few minutes.
Well, it was a case of promoting Newfoundland music or Newfoundland musicians in general, not just St. John's, across the island. And what better way to get the people together than have a music trade show? So I called all my suppliers, Fender and Gibson and Martin, Ovation, you name it, and asked them would they send down a representative and some gear, some equipment, including Gretsch guitars. And they all agreed. They thought it was a good idea. So we got the Bella Vista. The old top section of the Bella Vista was set up with booths, block for equipment. That drew a lot of people in. The idea was that we would have a voting session, myself and Bob Cousins and Mr. Fred Walsh, who was the manager over at the time, said, well, we'll pull it off. Somebody got to start it. And we'll get the people in, and we'll have a notice through the Newfoundlander. We'll see who's doing what and who's doing good and all that stuff in the music, and we'll give an award for the best country group, best rock and roll group, best folk group, and whatever, right? That really worked. And on the end of the three-day session, we would have a dinner and present the awards. Mm-hmm. And we did that. It was the first and only one that ever happened, far as I know.
Yeah, that was innovative. That was innovative for the time. It was the first.
And that was a lot, because all that equipment I'm talking about that filled that room over there had to be brought in. That all had to come in from Toronto, Montreal.
Did you get good attendance?
Yes, block, 3 days block.
And
that's where I met some of the people for the audit record sessions. They all came in for that.
So you would hope that that would be a springboard for things to come, but it didn't work out that way.
No. We were hoping that what would happen, we have election officers. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that to be an officer as such. We would have an election officers, and we have a meeting once a month, and the goal was be to promote local musicians, and we had a problem with wages, like the band. Even today, I know some bands today make the same thing we made back in 1972. There's something wrong with that picture. I mean, taxi drivers are getting more money. The beer people are getting more money. The liquor people get more money. Mm-hmm. The club owners are getting... They're playing records for Lancaster or CDs, and they're getting $10 cover charge.
Right.
But the only one that ain't making any money is still the musicians.
Yeah.
So this was supposed to be a springboard to help bring us all together as a group. And then instead of arguing with club owners or government or whatever, we could call meetings, voice our concerns, almost like a union would do, right, and say this is what we think is fair and what you guys think. We try to work it out. But it didn't happen. They had an election of officers. After that day, everybody clapped their hands. It was a great session, 3 days. not a thing came out of it.
Yeah, that's too bad. It was an idea that was ahead of its time, I think. But it was about 20 years later before the Music Industry Association of Newfoundland actually formed. I think I was in 1992.
Yeah.
You were at this in 1973. You were about 20 years ahead of your time. By the early 1970s, many Newfoundland recording artists were doing well locally and in parts of Canada as well. Artists like Hibbs, Nolan, and Payne were well-established names in Newfoundland, Eastern Canada, and Toronto. In 1974, the Audio Atlantic Recording Company, better known as Audit, decided to explore Newfoundland for undiscovered talent. They connected with Lou Skinner to arrange recording sessions for some established artists and for some unknowns. Now, recording facilities were non-existent in St. John's in the early 1970s, so they set up a studio at Mon Radio on the campus of Memorial University. Once again, Lou Skinner. After the Nashville album, the Country Ducats with Ed Rosell, I don't think there was any other albums with the Ducats' name on them. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that was like, I know you continued to record with the Ducats backing up other musicians for a while.
The Audit sessions, yeah.
And we're into the mid-70s by now. But there were no more Ducats albums, were there?
No.
So let's talk about those Audio Atlantic, I think is the full name as well. Better known as Audet, that label. And I know that the Country Ducats and Lou Skinner backed up a number of musicians and their recordings that were done for...
If somebody came in and wanted to record, then the agreement was that we would do the session work for them, right? And that was it right here at the university.
Right. Now, I think you told me before we started to record a little bit how that all came about. Just tell me about that again.
Well, Marathon was one label. We were on the Marathon label with some country stuff. But Audit Records wanted to get in on the scene down there because they knew of Dick Nolan. They knew of Omer Blondell and people like that. And they said, they called me and asked me, did I know all the musicians? I said, yeah, I know most everybody. He said, if we send an engineer down there and book a studio for a week, could you sign up some people? And then you get to pick the musicians or your own band, whatever, to back them. But if they came in with their own band, their own musicians, then that's fine too. So I said, okay, good enough. So I started calling around some people, and the word got out that I was booking sessions, and they could come in and do their album at no charge, and they would get paid a fee based on sales. That part, I never had nothing to do with. My job was just to encourage these people to record for Audit, good, bad, and different. When the session was over, I never made no judgment as to what happened to it. The tape went to Toronto, and they made the decision, right? Some of the people that we recorded was Ann Butler. Ann was out of Bay Verde at the time, but she's in Steveville, I understand now. Rick Emeron out of Grand Falls. Ernest Stacy. The Ducats themselves, George Grandy.
Corey and Trina,
yes.
Minnie White.
And we did Minnie White session, yeah. Did a few sessions for Minnie. Minnie had a rule that she would only go in the studio if the Ducats back her up. That was her rule.
Yeah, actually, I'd like you to talk to me about Minnie White because she's known as the... First Lady of the Accordion,
First
I think.
First Lady of the Accordion, yeah.
And I understand that you played a role in getting her into the studio.
Yeah. When I heard Minnie White play, I detected something different in her style of playing. It was had a bit of a Frenchy type sound in her style of playing and everything, but not exactly like you would hear in St. George's or down around the Cape and all that. They got a different style again, like Felix Fromager, right? Oh, super accordion player. But she was different. And I said, well, why don't you do a recording session? What, me do a recording session? She said, you got to be crazy. I said, no, I'm not crazy. I think you should do it. No, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, come on, you got to get out of the kitchen and get in the studio. No, I don't even have a recording any good. That old thing I got here, she said I paid $16 for it. It sounds terrible and starting to fall apart on me. And who's going to play? I said, well, Dukas. I'll tell you what, she said, if I had to get a loan of a half-decent accordion, I would certainly consider it. I said, well, I'll cook a deal with you. I'll buy you an accordion. I'll buy you a nice owner accordion, and the Dukas will be there to do the session. I suppose, she said, I suppose.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah.
How old was she then?
This sort of backfired on me, too, a little bit. Then my mother heard that I was buying many accordion. I said, don't worry about it, Mom. I got one cover for you, too. Which I did. Yeah. Keep peace, right? Keep peace. So, yeah, Minnie White got her accordion, and she went into the studio and started playing.
How old would she have been?
Who, Minnie at the time?
Yeah.
My God, she had to be early 60s, I say.
Yeah.
Or she old. Couldn't understand that. You know, at 60 or 64 years old, whatever she was at the time, going to a studio and start a career.
Was she playing publicly? Before that?
No, no.
So this was before her days at the Starlight.
Thing. Oh, yes, many, many years before that. Yeah, she never played outside of her house. And there's one down at the Jack's recording studio we did. That was good because I played, I can honestly say I just played guitar on that, and Brother Roger became a producer for that one and did some different arrangements that wouldn't normal for traditional music, and it turned out really, really good. I think that's the best thing she did, that one. Ills of Home, or something that it's called, I forget the name.
Yeah, that came later. There was a home, she did Homestead Reels, that was one.
That's a different one,
that
yeah.
That was on the Key label, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hills of Home, I think, and Newfoundland Accordion and Mandolin Favorites, that was the first one.
That's another one, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. The earliest one that we're talking about now.
Yeah.
A fine album, I think, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Very energetic. And
but she did the sessions. And she never thought no more of it. It was just sessions, right? And she ordered the records herself and sold it herself. Maybe that was another misgiving, like the Dukas had misgivings. I think what Minnie White would have did a lot better if she is signed with somebody or got a manager to make sure all these CDs were ordered, stock good, mm-hmm. distributed. She was doing her own distributing, too, from mm-hmm. her house. Like music stores or Radio Shacks, whoever wanted to carry it, they'd ship them out to them, and that was it. Right? So the volume of sales was almost impossible to have good volume of sales. Mm. But she became very, very well known. She ended up in Nova Scotia playing.
She became very well known locally, for sure.
Yeah, and she well known in Nova Scotia, too. She used to go over there for the festivals and everything, mm-hmm. play.
We'll be right back.
backed by Lou Skinner and the Country Dukettes, Newfoundland's First Lady of the Accordion, her own composition, Little Wedding, from her first long-playing album, Newfoundland Accordion and Mandolin Favorites, released in 1974 on the Audit label. Well, you know, after that rousing number, we need a little break, and when Newfound Records returns, Lou Skinner helps aspiring Newfoundland recording artists live their dreams.
Some like it hot, some like it on the rocks. Me, I like it fair. Fair trade coffee means that farmers improve their living conditions while respecting the environment, and it tastes really good. For a decent cup of coffee, look for the transfer logo. It's your guarantee that the coffee growers will pay the fair price and that the environment is protected. For more information, call 514-522-2000 or 1-888-663-3247. This message has been brought to you by Équiterre with the support of the Canadian International Development Agency.
This is 93.5 CHMR FM in St. John's, Newfoundland.
Hi, I'm George Mimenez. Join me every week for my show, It's All Greek to Me. It's an hour of great music, Thursdays at 5, right here on CHMR.
I'm Wayne Tucker, and you're listening to the Newfound Records Radio Hour on CHMR FM. Today, part two of the Lou Skinner story. Now, some artists who had previously recorded, like George Grandy, Ed Rousel, and John White, recorded at Mun Radio Studio during the audit sessions. But in addition to Minnie White, a few virtual unknowns took advantage of the unique opportunity to be backed by the province's top country band, Lou Skinner and the Country Dukettes. Next, Lou speaks of the recording facility at Mun Radio and recording artists like Ann Butler, Ern Stacey, and Corey and Trina. He also speaks of his old friend, the king of the Bjorn Peninsula, George Grandy. Can you remember what kind of a setup there was at Mun Radio Studios, what it was like in there, where this was actually located and that sort of thing?
No.
I think it was I remember Thompson Student Center, I believe.
Thompson Student Center, yes. The guy who handled it, Ron, what did he say his name was? Ron Duclos?
D-U-C-L-O-S.
Yeah, Ron Douglas or whatever. When he came down with a very highfalutin tape recorder. Hmm. And he just put it on the desk and he patched into the board that was down there. Mm-hmm. But he did have a mixing capabilities for all the instruments and the voices. And what they did, they just recorded it all. And then he took his tapes off and took them back to Toronto and did the mixing back there.
Those Audette recordings, I just didn't want to quite leave them yet. Tell me about Ann Butler.
Ann Butler, originally from Bay Verte. Her husband, Gerald, was a guitar player, and they had a country band there, a little country band. Duke has played it there in Bay Verte. And they were up one night, and she told me she sang and all that. I said, well, what you should do is come up and do a tune. And she came up and did a tune with us. She probably can't remember that. So years later, when she came to St. John's with some money in her pocket to record, we met over at the Bella Vista when we were doing the trade show, and I told her the deal. So she said, you know, I wouldn't mind. I'll come down there and do it with you, but you fellas back me up. I said, yeah, absolutely. I thought she was a good singer. I think she had and a good potential. But they moved out of Bay Verte and went into Stephenville, and she just never stuck with the music scene. I guess what it is, like everything, you got to have four or five people around you who think like you and want to have it exact, you know, want to do the same thing together. And she never had that. She never had the musicians around her that wanted to back her up or whatever.
Right.
And of course, she's a mother too. She was busy with a family life.
So you played a role in getting her into the studio?
Yeah, got her in the studio and did a session. It was a nice session. I play it once in a while.
Yes, yeah. I like the album. I play it on my show once in a while, and that duet she does with George Grandy.
Yeah, and George Grandy, another example, a good old friend, like we met. I ended up playing in St. Pierre one year with George Grandy. He wouldn't play, and so at my went down Grand Bank, and he was coming through the door with his guitar. I said, "Where the hell are you going?" He said, "I'm going to St. Pierre." "You get your guitar?" I said, "Yeah, good." He said, "You're going to play with me." "I got no guitar player." So in a matter of minutes, I was down board of a boat going to St. Pierre, right? Ernst Stacy from Swift Current, he wanted to do a session, and he's there. Rick Seamer from Grand Falls area, and Minnie White that you said.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I forgot, but there was at least 12, 13 sessions happened that week, in a 12-day period.
Yeah, and some of them you played on, some of them you
and some we played on, some we never. Someone came in with their own musicians, yeah. Right, like John White.
Ernst Stacy, tell me more about him. You mentioned he's from Swift Current.
I had a music store on Water Street back in the 70s, and Aaron was just one of those good customers who came in all the time buying stuff, and he was into fishing. He was a lobster fisherman, and he would bring in lobsters once in a while. I don't like anything from the water, but there was other staff there who liked lobsters, and he would bring them in, and he got talking about a band. He had a band out there. Needed some equipment. He bought equipment from me, and then one day he came in. The timing was just right. He said, "I think we're doing a record now." He said, "Will you play on it?" I said, "I can do better than that." I said, "I can give you the complete Ducasse band." I said, "We're doing sessions for Audit Records in at the university." So I said, I gave him the date and time I wanted him to be there, and he showed up, and next thing you know, he got an album out.
Do you ever hear from him now? Is he still alive?
No, last time, God love him, last time I heard from Hearn was the week that Brother Roger died.
Right.
He was one of the first ones to call me.
Yes.
Prior to that, I never heard from Ernst Stacy but 10 years. 10, Roger, 15 years.
When did Roger pass away?
February 2002.
What about Ann Butler? You say she's still living.
She's still in Stephenville, yeah.
And George Grandy is still alive.
George is still alive,
I'd love to get in touch with him. Is he down Grand Bank?
Yeah, he's still in Grand Bank working. He got I understood he had a equipment company, like a tractor and bulldozer and that type of trucks. I know he always had a truck, doing truck for construction business.
I wonder if he's still involved in music at all.
Yeah, he still does a bit of playing.
He's been around forever, sure.
Yeah. Well, I remember in Port of Bass turning on the radio and getting... listen to George Grandy. There was two bands out of Grand Bank down that way. It was George Grandy's Country Show and it was Ridge and the Rebels. They were a rock and roll band.
Ridge and the Rebels from Grand Bank?
Yeah.
Never heard of them.
Yeah. The Ridge is in town. He'd been in town for years.
What's his last name?
House. House. Ridge House. And there was a bunch of them, and every once in a while they have a reunion.
Mm-hmm.
They still have a reunion. I don't know if once a year or once every 2 years, which is nice.
Yeah,
they all get together and they play the music they did back in the 60s, you know.
But George Grandy, he rules the Bjorn Peninsula for decades.
Yes. He was like Elvis down there, right?
Yeah.
And he did rock and roll. He liked rock and roll. He did country.
Have some stories to tell because he beat around the club so long. And
he's one of the most easiest going persons I ever met in my life.
He sounds that way.
Yeah. Nothing meant nothing. All he said was, "Yes, boy." Something else, isn't it?
He put out three albums, I think, which were pretty good, but nothing lately. I haven't heard anything about him. I'm glad to hear that he's still alive. One of these
days, he's still doing a little bit of playing, and he's still working down there.
Corey and Trina, you played on their album, I think.
Yeah, we played on their album, too, yeah.
Now, they were a big name
through
much of the 70s.
They were great show people. Trina played a little bit of drum and tambourine and all that stuff, and Corey played a guitar and a mouth organ at one time, and they had good harmonies down.
I liked her singing.
Had good harmonies down, and they had a good stage show. They had a stage all full of stuffed animals and putting on skits. They did the old-fashioned skits, coming out with silver Strets on and all that stuff.
I mean, they were one of the top entertaining groups in the province in the mid and late 70s.
Oh, definitely, yes. Yeah, wherever they play, they could go anywhere, and they were blocked. To a point, Corey and Trina bought a RV unit, and they were going around all the outports, everywhere they went. I mean, they were like Elvis coming back, you know? Yeah, they had a great show.
Looking out bowl. I am a rich nobleman's daughter. I've 25,000 in gold. I leave my old father and mother to wed with this young sailor bold. Don't leave your old father or mother, for you know they're the best friends you'll find. In sailors don't put no dependents, they leave their true lovers behind. She dressed like a jolly young sailor, with trousers and jacket so blue. 3 years and a half on the ocean, she plowed with her willie so true. Three times with her love she got shipwrecked, she always proved loyal and true. Her duty she did as a sailor, Caroline and her young sailor bold. And the tears like large raindrops in flow. And now they arrive in old England, Caroline and her young sailor bold. Her father, he admired Willie, because he belonged to the sea. If life church they went early next morning, their joined hands in wedlock were sold, and now they live happy together, Caroline and her young sailor bold.
Cause everybody's had the blues.
The wonderful voice of Bayvert's Ann Butler from her only album, Country Sunshine, recorded in 1974 on the Audit label. And Ann was backed by Lou Skinner and the Country Dukettes. We heard her sing the Merle Haggard composition, Everybody's Had the Blues. And before Ann, Corey and Trina from their first album, Songs of Newfoundland's Corey and Trina, with Caroline and her young sailor beau, once again backed by the Country Dukettes. Next up, from Grand Bank, George Grandy does a little rock and roll, and we're going to hear on this one some dandy lead guitar licks by Lou Skinner. Now, we usually don't associate steel guitar with country music. I mean, really, now, who would expect steel on a Chuck Berry rocker? But check this one out. And I suspect it's Fred Lawrence of the Country Dukettes playing the steel on Berry's 1958 hit, Johnny Be Good.
Shine my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here again. No more loneliness, only happiness. Love's gonna live here again. Hair bells are ringing, I hear birds singing. Love's gonna live here again. I hear bees a humming, that I know the days are coming. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here again. No more loneliness, only happiness. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here again.
That song spent 16 weeks at number one in 1963. It was Buck Owens' biggest hit, Love's Gonna Live Here. And we just heard it sung by a lobster fisherman from Swift Current on the Buron Peninsula, Ern Stacy. And Ern was backed by Lou Skinner and the Country Ducats on his one and only recording. Before Earn, we heard George Grandy. Well, you know, we are winding down here in our tribute to Lou Skinner. And our last track will come from Rick Barron. Rick surrounded himself with some of the province's finest musicians for his first single, Teenage Idol. He recorded that at Lloyd Bartlett's studio in St. John's in 1981. And the song, Teenage Idol, had been a top five hit for Ricky Nelson in 1962. In addition to Lou Skinner on guitar, the musicians were Lou's brother and fellow Ducat at the time, Roger Skinner on drums, Rick Hollett on keys, and Nelson Giles on bass, and of course Rick Barron handled the vocals.
Some people call me a teenage idol. Some people say they envy me. I guess they've no way of knowing how lonesome I can be. I need somebody to be my baby, someone to tell my troubles to. There's no way I'll ever find her, 'cause I'm just passing through. Travel around from town to lonely town. Guess I'll always be just a rolling stone. If I find fortune and fame and everybody knows my name, won't be anything if I'm all alone. Get no rest when I'm feeling weary. No help when I'm feeling low. Just try and keep on living. Just smile and do my show. I'll always be just a rolling stone. If I find fortune and fame and everybody knows my name, won't be anything if I'm all alone. I need somebody to be my baby, someone to tell my troubles to. There's no way I'll ever find her, 'cause I'm just passing. People call me a teenage idol. People say they envy me. I guess they've no way of knowing. Just how...
Our time is up for another week. The Ducats take us out with the Lou Skinner composition, Drowsy. You've been listening to the Newfound Records Radio Hour. The show is recorded at the CHMR Studios, Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland. The Lou Skinner story was researched, produced, and hosted by me, Wayne Tucker. The show airs Saturday at noon and rebroadcasts on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Thanks to Lou Skinner for the interview, which was recorded at the CHMR Studios in March 2012. And thanks for the music, Lou, and keep it coming. And by the way, the good news is that Lou is still rocking. Watch for him with the Ducats and other bands in and around St. John's. Until next time, as always, be kind to Mother Earth and her children. Bye-bye.